Okay, this week's parasha begins Vayetze Yaakov v'Yosheva v'yelech Harana, and Rashi of course points out that seems very redundant. He left Beersheva, he went to Haran. We know where he was in Beersheva. So let us just say that he went to Haran. So Rashi says that the Torah doesn't want to leave out the departure from Beersheva because that's important also, because it's Tzias Tzadik Min HaMakom Oisei Roshem, that when a Tzadik leaves the place, it has an impact on the place. That's the classic pshat, that's Rashi. There's a very interesting Beis HaLevi here. When Beis HaLevi says that if you take a look in the end of Parshas Toldos, why was Yaakov leaving? The short answer is Yaakov was leaving because his parents told him to. Mm-hmm. Specifically, his father and his mother, they both told him to, and they told him for two separate reasons. His mother said, "Hine Esav achicha masnachem l'chal hargecha. Esav's trying to kill you. So kum barach l'cha elavan achicharana. So get out of here. Run away to escape from Esav." Yitzchak told him, "Kum leich paden loisikach isha mibnais kenan. Kum leich padena aram v'kachacham yisham isha." Both of them said, "Leave here. Go to Padan Aram." Rivka said, "Because Esav's trying to kill you." And Yitzchak said, "Because I want you to find the Shidduch." So Beis HaLevi says that, you know, in every time that somebody goes from point A to point B, so either the reason is because he's trying to get out of point A, or the reason is because he's trying to reach point B. Over here, Rivka's instructions were about getting out of point A, while Yitzchak's instructions were about reaching point B. So both of them were equally important motivators. He was doing it both to get out of Beersheva and to go to Haran, because he was doing it to be Mekayim, Mitzvahs Aviv, and Mitzvahs Imay. So that's why the Torah wouldn't leave either one out. If it would have just said Ve'elech Harana, well, that's following his father's instructions, but it would leave out the motivation of following his mother's instructions. If it would just say that he left Beersheva, that's his mother's instructions, but leave out his father's. That's why it says Ve'yetze Yaakov Beersheva Ve'elech Harana. And this is wrote down in the Sefer Beis HaLevi. Beis HaLevi is Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik. He was the first of the Soloveitchik dynasty of Rabbanim. He was the Rav of Brisk. His son was Rav Chaim, and many, you know, grandchildren and great-grandchildren that are prominent Rabbanim. I have a Sefer at home, the Shiurim of Rav Meir Soloveitchik, Chumash Shiurim, or Rav Meir Soloveitchik, who is a great-grandson, I guess, of the Beis HaLevi. And he has.
Where was he now? Manhattan.
In Manhattan. So that's a cousin. Right. That's from Meir Soloveitchik. There's two. Reb Chaim, Reb Soloveitchik's son was Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim had two sons who were important rabbinic figures. One was Reb Velvel, who was the Brisker Rav, and he moved to Yerushalayim during the war. And one was Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, who came to America. Now, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik had two sons who were important rabbinic, both heads of yeshivas. So one was Rav Yoshe Ber, who was the head of YU, and the other was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago, the Brisk in Chicago. Now, the man that you're referring to is a grandson of that Rav Aaron. Rav Velvel, the Brisker Rav, he also had sons that were Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, Rav Beryl, Rav David, Rav Meir. So that Rav Meir is a first cousin of Rav Aaron and Rav Yoshe Ber in America. But the Rav Meir that you're referring to, who's Rav Aaron's grandson, that makes him...
Portuguese, the
Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. That makes him a first cousin twice removed, I think, from the Rav Meir in Yerushalayim. Anyway, so this Rav Meir Soloveitchik from Yerushalayim has a nice ta'ara. He says, if you take a look later on in Parshas Vayetze, when after Yaakov has spent many years and built a family in Padan Aram, so then Hashem comes to him and tells him, you know, you finished here, it's time to go back. The lashon of the pasuk is, Kum tzei min ha'aretz hazois v'shuv el eretz meilad techa. The double expression, it mamash matches the double expression at the beginning of the parasha, Meaning to say that Hashem was telling him that now also there's a double imperative. There's a reason why you need to get away from here, Lavan. You have to get away from Lavan, and there's a reason to get back to Eretz Yisrael. And, you know, there's a lot of Makairis, and certainly in the Sfarim HaKadoshim, I think maybe in the Zayar also, about how Vayetze, the whole Vayetze is the first prototype in the Maisa Avi Simon Labanim of an idea of Golos. It's the Lashon of the Sfas Emes that Yaakov was Yetze Beresh Golim. He went and sort of trailblazed the path for all the Yidden that after him would have to leave Eretz Yisrael, the concept of Golos. So Vayetze Yaakov Vayeshev Yelech Harana is a simon labanim of Golos. In which case, I guess you could say that pasuk where it talks about Kum Tseim in Ha'aretz Hazayis V'shuv El Eretz Moed La'Techa is a simon labanim, a ma'aseh of a simon labanim of a geula. And I think it's a very nice ha'ara about the tzipi li Yeshua, right? Chazal said that he's supposed to be mitzapa li Yeshua, that a person's supposed to want the Yeshua to come. What I see here is that there's supposed to be two components that one has to work on. One is a she'ifa, a wish that we should be back in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash, with Kadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus being the scholar to the world, all the things that we associate with the Beis HaMashiach. But secondly, also, same in Ha'aretz Hazois, an idea that we shouldn't really be so comfortable in Golas, that we have a sense that we have to get out of here, which, you know, in different parts of our history, one or the other of these was a bigger Nisayan. But both of those are part of it. The Tseim and Ha'aretz HaZois, V'shuv El Eretz Moed La'Techa, are the two components corresponding to the Vayetzem V'yashav V'yelech Harana. Okay. Let's go back to Parshas Toldos. Parshas Toldos tells the story of the Mechiras HaBachayra. Esav comes from the field and he's hungry and he sees Yaakov cooking something and he says, Haliteni namen adam adam azag, pour some of that into my mouth. And Yaakov says, sell me the b'chayra. So Esav says, okay, hine anaychi halei v'lamos, v'lamos ali b'chayra. So fine, and he sells it to him. Yaakov says, he shovel li, v'hi shovel li. And then, v'yiv ez Esav esav b'chayra. That's the story as the Torah tells it. What exactly was he selling? There's a lot of different interpretations among the Mefarshim. Rashi says that it was really about the Avodah, doing the Avodah of Karbanis, which was reserved for Bechirim. So Yaakov was buying that right off of Esav. The Ibn Ezra, very much in the Pshuta Shel Mikri, he says Bechira means the double share of the inheritance, the Pishnayim, money. The Ramban disagrees with that. He says he doesn't think that there was a din of Pishnayim before Matan Torah, but along similar lines, he says, but there was prestige, stature, the firstborn, there was a certain sarara that the other family would be doing towards the Bechar, and that's what he was buying from him. And there's a fourth pshat that really you see, you know, I think more among Achreinim, that maybe what he was buying was really the right to be the last link in the chain of Avram, of the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram was given a nevuah, ki bi Yitzchak, ki kari l'chazera, and there's that fateful bays in bi Yitzchak, which told him that it's not the whole Yitzchak, but half of Yitzchak is going to be a hemshech of this Messiah. So which half was that going to be? And that's what Yaakov was buying from Esau in this act. Al-Kaparim, according to all of them, it would seem that it's something significant that Yaakov was buying. I guess you could see it from the parasha also. It was important to Yaakov. He said, you want these lentils? You have to sell me the Bechira. And after Esau agreed, he wasn't satisfied. He said, he's shavali, I want you to make a shvua. So apparently it was something important. And if it was something important, so the kasha is, what kind of a deal is this? What kind of a trade? There's a law in the Torah of oina, that you're not allowed to swindle somebody. You're not allowed to take advantage of someone and get the better end of a deal.
You need a fair market value to worry about this.
What do you mean?
You need a value.
Right, so...
I know he's...
Certainly, if this was Bechaira, so then... I mean, if it was, let's say, if it was the Pishnayim, then there should be more of a market value. Yeah, okay, according to the others...
So
okay,
what's the question that the lentils were not worth the value?
We're not worth the Bechaira.
Esav is going to die. Esav said he was going to die.
So one of the possibilities...
Maybe the answer really is Yaakov identified as a Bechaira.
But he was going to die.
So there is that lush in the puzzle where it says he didn't. What?
You're only worth whatever Esav thinks they're worth.
Ah, okay. So that's very good. This is what you say there. Chaim Shmulevitz says, you know, maybe we'll come back to it at the end of this year. We will come back to that. But this kasha that if there is a nav, and again, it's a serious kasha because it affects the chalais of a mechira. You know, it's not so usual that you have mefarshim on Choshen Mishpat and the lamdish asvarim on Choshen Mishpat, like the Kseis HaChoshen, and the mefarshim chumish, especially in Bereishis, let's say like the Arachayim HaKadosh, that talk about the same kashas. There's very little overlap between such svarim. But over here in Parshas Toldos, you do have overlap. You have the Kseis and the Arachayim both talking about kashas having to do with the Mechiras HaBechira and how it could be seen as legitimate from a Choshen Mishpat perspective. So one of the kashas that the Aruch Chaim deals with is the kasha of Aino, that if a price is unfair by more than a small percentage, more than a sixth, the Gemara says, then the Mekach is batal. So why isn't that an issue over here? Aruch Chaim's kasha? Aruch Chaim's kasha. So the truth is that it's addressed already in the Ibn Ezra, although the Ibn Ezra doesn't come to it from the perspective of like the lumdish of Shaila of why isn't the Mekach batal because it's unfair. He's just trying to understand the story. Why would Esav do this? Why would Esav sell all this for a pot of lentils? And you know, you heard that he was going to die. So the truth is that depends on how you read that pasuk. Hinei enochi holich lamos. So you were assuming, and the Aruch Chaim also makes such a suggestion that what it means is he was going to drop dead. But that's not the pasuk.
The question that it was on the run.
I say one day I'm going to die. It's going to be
right. Well, Rashi says that he didn't
have the
chlamos. Is that the bechayr is not so valuable to me because one day I'm going to die.
The pasuk is not that he was going to die. That he was hungry. That's not the pasuk.
I don't think so.
I thought it was that.
I would have thought the other way around. That's the pasuk.
Like you said, I'm dying from hunger.
Okay. So the Ben Ezra doesn't assume that way.
He didn't mean to hide from him. He wanted him to give it to him. He was not giving him money for it. He wasn't giving him anything for it. He wanted him to give it to him. So there's no one know when somebody gives him a ton.
No, Yaakov charged him.
What did he charge him?
The lentils. Yaakov charged him the Bechaira. Yaakov charged him. It's a sale.
There's
a quid pro quo. That's a sale.
Well, do me a favor and I'll give you a favor.
That's a trade.
Do me
Ibn Ezra says something very surprising to I think to most of us that have been learning Chumash and have some ideas about the Avos. The Ibn Ezra says something very radical. He says that it was actually a pretty fair price. Because a double portion in Yitzchak's Bechaira wasn't worth that much. Because Yitzchak was a poor man. He was a very poor man. He didn't have much to leave over to his children. So Esav wanted some food. Yaakov wanted a double portion of the inheritance. Okay, so they sold it.
Double of nothing is still nothing.
Yeah, right. So Yitzchak, how could you say such a thing? Right. Don't we know that Yitzchak inherited so much money from his father? Avram was such a rich man.
So the Ibn Ezra
says that Rabbim Yitmu, I know everybody's going to ask on me that, how could, you know, when I tell people this, that Yitzchak was a poor man, they say, but he inherited so much money from his father. And the Ibn Ezra writes sarcastically, he says, Kiyuli never saw somebody with a lot of money that ended up losing the money. He says such things happen. So it happens to Yitzchak. He said, then they asked me, Akasha, they say, well, first he said, I'll tell you why I think. How does he know that? Oh, so he says, well, how do I know it? I says, I'll give you four rayas. So his first raya is this. First raya is that if Esav is willing to sell the bechira for a pot of lentils, it couldn't have been much money there.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you another raya. It says earlier in the parasha. Now each of these rayas is gonna, you know, is gonna grizzle you. It's a Yiddish word, right? that you're gonna be concerned because it's gonna go against the midrashim that we grew up with. But bear in mind, Ibn Ezra, when he's learning Chumash, his avodah is just Pshuta Shel Mikra. He's just trying to understand Pshuta Shel Mikra. He refers to that in this piece. He says, yes, there's Midrashim. The Midrashim, you know, may have a deeper meaning, but I'm trying to explain Pshuta Shel Mikra. He says, what do you say at the beginning of the parasha? That Yitzchak loved Esav, ki tzayid b'fiv, because Esav fed him. He said, if Yitzchak could just, you know, order Uber Eats anytime he wanted, then he wouldn't have to love especially this son that was able to bring him food. It sounds like food was a scarcity. Yitzchak had to wonder where his next meal was going to come from. And look where it came from. It came from Esav. So Yitzchak loved Esav. That's one raya. Another raya is that Esav sold the Bechira for a pot of lentils. A third raya. When Rivka sends Yaakov in to get the brachas from Yitzchak, Yaakov says, but I don't have anything nice to wear. And Rivka says, I have Esav's begadim chamudais. Why did Yaakov have begadim chamudais? Begadim chamudais means a nice... Now, of course, there's a midrashim. Begadim chamudais is something special. But the Pshuta Shel Mikra is that Esav had begadim chamudais because, you know, Esav was out, you know, out on the town. He was making his own money. He had his own income streams. But Yaakov was just living off of his parents and he was wearing hand-me-downs. He was wearing, you know, clothes from the Gemach. So Rivka had to give him Esav's begadim chamudais.
But the fact that Rivka got two animals every day as part of her...
So he even asks that. He says that which... Well, the two animals every day you don't see in the Pasuk. But she got two animals that day. So he says...
I think
Rashi
says that.
Right. That's a Medrash. So, no, the Ibn Ezra...
It had to come from Yitzchak.
The Ibn Ezra is not going with any Midrashim. Right? That he's just trying to uncover the Pshuta Shel Mikra. But he refers to the Shnei Gedoyei Izim. And I think he says over there that... The fact that she had two goats, you know, that's not a big fortune. And maybe she didn't even have any goats. Maybe she just had a little money and she sent him to the market to buy two goats. And that's what he says about the two goats. But he says, what's his fourth raya? Now, at the end of the parasha, Yaakov runs away. And then in Parashas Vayetze, this week's parasha, we find that he davens with Emiel Akim Imadi Shemani, right? Then, and if he'll give me, when us and Akim beget little boy, lechem lechel, the beget little boy. Sounds like he was penniless. Now here again, you know, there's Midrashim. Eliphaz came and took away all his money, but that's Midrashim. Ibn Ezra says that I have four proofs. If you're just learning Parshas Toldos, Parshas Vayetze, the picture comes across that Esav was that Yitzchak was a poor man, and he says, you know, that which people say, oh, but he inherited so much money. Okay, you could have money, you could lose money. It's not so unusual. Then he says, and the Urei Lev. Uve with a I involve reish yud, meaning those that are blind-hearted, no, that he means to say, people ask a very foolish question. The Uri Leiv ask a question. They say, well, why would Hashem deprive Yitzchak of money? You know what? He should be rich. After all, he's Yitzchak Avinu. So he says, maybe they could tell me why Hashem deprived him of eyesight. Eyesight is also a chashuva thing, and Hashem deprived him of that. So and then he writes Va'al yidchunu bekanas shel drash, and don't push me off with a piece of straw of drash. Meaning you'll tell me midrashim. Yeah, the malachim were crying and by the akedah and that went into his eyes. He says that's a medrash v'yesh loy soid. He says not that I'm dismissive of midrashim, but midrashim are there for deeper messages. But we figure out the story without the midrashim. That's the Ben Ezra's way. So he says Al yidchunu bekanas shel drash. And he says this is his conclusion, that Yitzchak was a poor man, and that's why Esav was selling the Bechira for a pot of lentils. Now, the Ramban very strongly disagrees. And the Ramban, he writes over here, Rabbeinu Avram hishtabish bekan ma'oid. Rabbeinu Avram, that's the Ibn Ezra, hishtabish bekan ma'oid, made a very big mistake. He said he said a chiddush here in this parasha, which is completely wrong. And the Ramban says what all of you said, that we see in the Pesukim that Esau, that Yitzchak did have a lot of money. He inherited money from his father. So okay, so the Ramban says, yeah, but people could lose their money. But the Ramban says, but if you follow the money trail here, over here, he inherited money from his father. Then you have the story with the Bechira, right, shortly after the inheritance. So apparently he quickly lost that fortune. Then later in the parasha, you have that he has these wells and he's making treaties with Avimelech over the real estate. So apparently he's very wealthy again. And then further in the parasha, you have when Yaakov is going in to get the brachos and he doesn't have the gadim hamudos. So if we take all of the proof, like it's not all, the Ibn Ezra brought four proofs, but they weren't all from the same part of his life. So if you're going to follow that trail, it's going to turn out that he didn't lose one fortune, he lost two fortunes. Now, okay, that could be possible also, but the Ramban says, but that already we would call a shlamazel. That's not so common, right? That somebody should lose two tremendous fortunes. He says, he uses an expression, this is already getting silly, to try to stick that into the parasha, that Yitzchak was a very, very rich person twice and lost it both times. And then the Ramban says, and furthermore, you know, you could say that there's such a thing as a tzaddik v'raloi, and we can't answer questions and no Hashem's cheshbonis, so it's not shver that Yitzchak could be a poor man. He says, it's true that, you know, we don't know Hashem's cheshbonis for every individual, but Yitzchak, it says, v'yivarech oisei elikim, that Kadosh Baruch Hu personally benched him. And the Ramban says, u'birkas Hashem hi tashir, this is the lashon of a pasuk in Mishlei, u'birkas Hashem hi tashir v'la yosef etzav ima, that a bracha from Hashem, somebody that's directly blessed by Hashem, should not look like a shlamazel. He says, that just can't be. So, clearly, Yitzchak was wealthy. This is not the answer, this is not the explanation of the parasha. Yitzchak was a rich man from beginning to end. The Ramban completely rejects this chiddush of the Ben Ezra, and it's an interesting piece of trivia, this shita of the Ibn Ezra, but it's not accepted by the Ramban.
I'm sorry, when did the Ibn Ezra live?
The Ibn Ezra lived in the 1100s, and the Ramban in the 1200s. Right. And the Ramban writes in his Akdama, I guess it's kedai to mention over here, because we're seeing the Ramban, you know, be a little bit harsh here on the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban writes in his Akdama, there were two main commentaries on Chumash before he came along, Rashi and Ibn Ezra. And the Ramban said, the Ramban mentions both of them in his Hakdama, he has a poem at the beginning of his Pirush al Chumash, really before the Hakdama. There's a poem describing what he's going to do and the feelings that are motivating him. And over there he refers to the fact that Rashi and Ibn Ezra are the two Mefarshim that came before him. And he says that he relates to them very differently. Rashi uses an expression, Pirushe Rabbeinu Shleimai. He says, Va'asim l'ma'ar einai, neireis ha-manayra ha-tahayra, Pirushe Rabbeinu Shleimai, ateres tzvi u'tzvira sefara. He says, I'm going to make as the guide, the lamp that guides my way, the light of Rabbeinu Shleimai's Pirush. That's Rashi. And he writes, Loi mishpat ha-bachayra, Loi with above, right? That Rashi has the din of the firstborn, meaning among Mefarshi Chumash, like I'm now joining this class of Mefarshi Chumash, and everybody in this class recognizes that Rashi is our captain. Then he says about the Ibn Ezra, now that doesn't mean that he won't disagree with the Rashi, right? The Ramban often disagrees with Rashi, but he always treats him with respect. He says, I'm going to bring down his words, and I'm going to work on them, I'm going to ask kashas, but respectfully. He says with the Ibn Ezra, he uses, again, a lashon in I think in Mishlei, he says, I'm going to be knowing with him the techachas megula va'ahava mesutara, an open rebuke and a hidden love. So the love, you know, not that I think he's a bad guy. I hold of him, Meshekel, but I have a lot of serious criticisms of his Pirush on Chumash. I mean, really, the overarching criticism is that he thought that the Ibn Ezra was not deferential enough to Chazal. I was saying before that, you know, everything in this Ibn Ezra was against the Medrash. Now, the Ibn Ezra's goal is to understand Pshut Dershon Mikra, and the Ramban also recognizes such a goal. The Ramban also, in many places, will say, this is the Medrash of Chazal, but let's try to understand the Pshut Dershon Mikra. But it's still with more of a deference to Chazal, and he felt that the Ibn Ezra maybe wasn't deferential enough. Anyway, so the Ramban rejects this approach of the Ibn Ezra. that is the approach that Esav sold the Bechira because Yitzchak was poor. So the Ramban says, you know what Esav sold the Bechira? He said there's something very significant going on here. Ki ein chifetz b'ksilim rak sheyoichlu v'yishtu v'yasu cheftzam b'itam v'lo yachayshu liyoyim machar. Ramban says the aside of a fool is that he's only focused on the immediate, on what's going to feel good right now, and has no capacity to think about the future. Ein chifetz b'ksilim, ksilim are fools, rak sheyoichlu v'yishtu v'yasu cheftzam b'itam v'lo yachayshu liyoyim machar, and they're not concerned about tomorrow. There's a vert. I don't remember the whole thing, but something in the Megillas Esther, somebody has a vert about where Esther says, you know, she calls them to Achashverosh and Haman to a party, and by the first party, Achashverosh says, okay, so what would you like? And she says, I want you to come back again, Machar Esek Edvar HaMelech. I want to have another party that could be called the party of Machar, because... So maybe it's a Sfas Emes, maybe a Shem Yishmuel, because the advantage of Klal Yisrael over the Zera Amalek, Esav, is in Machar. Because that's the weakness of Esav, referring to this Ramban, the Lo Yachayshu L'Yayim Machar, they have no capacity to think about tomorrow. So that's connected to the Megillas Esther. Akoparim, the Ramban over here says...
Hayom.
That, right, that... I think I said that over in Shul Purim time, maybe.
If Esav is selling you the Hayom, because there's no money... Then why does he use the words that I'm going to die anyway? Just say I'm not interested. You can have it. There's no money anyway. Why do you have to use the excuse that I'm going to be dying anyway?
You're going back on the Ibn Ezra, right? Yeah, okay. We moved on already.
I'm still working on that.
Okay.
So the Ramban says
that what Esav, the story is meant to demonstrate that people like, it's a story, but it's also it's a paradigm of the way people like Esav work. They're just in the moment and they're not able to think about how their short, you know, how what they do today is going to affect their long term, and that's why people like Esav wind up like Esav. You know, it's obviously it has to do with being a tzaddik and a rasha, but he's not even focusing on that. It has to do with being a chacham and a ksil. You know, somebody who's a ksil. So if you give him a credit card with a $100,000 credit limit, so he'll enjoy himself very much and have $100,000 of debt, and then he'll worry about it. Yeah, that's the Taitch of Exil. So the Ramban says that's what this story means to demonstrate. There's such a beautiful piece in Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya brings down this Ramban, and then he writes that if you look at the Pesukim carefully, notice there's a very interesting piece of dramatic storytelling that's going on here. It says in Pasuk Chof Tes, that's where the story starts. Vayozid Yaakov Nazid. Yaakov was cooking a dish. Nazid means a cooked dish. It doesn't say what it was. Right? We all know, you know, we learned when we were children what it was, right? But if you're reading the Chumash, so in Pasuk Chof Tes, you have no idea what it was. And then Esav comes and says, wow, give me some of that stuff. And Yaakov says, you have to sell me the Bechira. And Esav says, fine, it's worth it. I'll sell you the Bechira. You swear? I swear. And then in Pasuk Lamed Dalid, that's the last Pasuk, it says, and Yaakov nasan le'esav lechem unizid adashim. The pot of lentils, right? So Rabbeinu Bachya says that the story keeps the reader in suspense about what was in the pot until the end. Because as you're reading, you're supposed to be imagining, right? You see there was a pot. You don't know what's in it. Esav comes and says, oh my gosh, can I have some? And Yaakov says, sure. Yaakov says, no, only if he's selling the Bechira. Esav says, fine, it's worth it, I'll sell you the Bechira. So the reader is supposed to be imagining, who knows what must be in this pot? Could you imagine what kind of an exquisite dish with the finest ingredients made by the world-famous chef, you know, with the fanciest sauces and everything? And then in the last pasuk, you know, literally when the lid comes off and we see inside, and the Torah says, no, it was just Hadashim. That's what he sold the whole thing for. And it's, you know, it has the effect of, you know, that it's supposed to shed some light on the character. That, you know, then you learn something about who Esav was. For that, you sold the Bechira. But by holding off the identity of the Tavshil until the end, the Torah helps to dramatize the impact of this lesson, that for that he sold the Bechira. Because Ein Chevetz Baksilim, just for what they can eat immediately. There's also Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch says that's very much related to the idea that the Torah describes one as a hunter and one as a shepherd. A shepherd, Yaakov, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all the others were shepherds. That was the family business. Esav went off on his own. He became a hunter. He says, what's the difference between a hunter and a shepherd? A hunter, it's all immediate. He kills and he eats, right? He kills something when he's hungry and he eats it and then he's satisfied. A shepherd, the actual avodah that you're doing doesn't give you food, doesn't give you shelter. It's you're raising flocks of cattle, right? So that gradually you're building wealth and it's all about, it's a slow and patient job that's supposed to give you long-term wealth, as opposed to being a hunter, which is a fast and exciting, adventurous job, which is all about providing immediate gratification. So the Rav Hirsch says that description of the two of them also highlights this idea of that the ksil is Masha Yechel v'yishtu v'lo yechush liyay machar.
I thought Yaakov was Yashav HaHalam. I thought he was busy learning.
At this point he was, but then later when he came to Paddan Aram, he became a shepherd. And Avram had been a shepherd, and Yitzchak was a shepherd. Although they were also in real estate, Avram and Yitzchak, the wells, that was... Okay, now, so we were talking about...
He gave up the learning. Is that what you're saying? Before he got married.
14 years of Kailo.
That was enough.
14 years ago.
The champagne. Okay.
Yeah.
Want to get
it? 24.
Clarified in my mind.
What's a Bikiva?
First one.
Yeah. Okay. So this was Be'inyin, the Kasha about, I know, we didn't really get, again, this. Ayin Shom and the Aruch Chaim has more of a lumnish, a discussion about the Einah angle, but this was really the departure point for this Ibn Ezra and got us into this whole discussion between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban.
What does the Ramban does with the Einah?
So he doesn't address it. He brings down, there's an interesting Yesh Emin that he brings down, but he doesn't like it. But it's just, I guess, nice to know that there's such an interpretation in the Chumash that the Ramban writes Yesh Mefarshim. And it's actually, the Radak has a Pirush on Bereshis, and the Radak says this in the name of his father, or of Moshe Kimchi. The pshat is that the Torah doesn't tell us the price. The Torah says, meaning the lentils were not the price. Esav said, I want lentils. Yaakov said, I'll only give you the lentils if you sell me the Bechira. So he said, okay, fine, I'll sell you the Bechira. And then they sat down and they negotiated a price. So the lentils were the impetus for Esav to sell the Bechira, but it's not. But the actual sale was a sale that was negotiated separately. So the Radak says this is his father's pshat. The Rambam brings it down as a Yesh Mefarshim, and he says Ve'in Zedati. He says I don't agree. I think the Torah means to be like we just heard from the Rambam. Right? The whole message over here is that Esav would throw away a Bechira for a pot of lentils. So the Ramban doesn't accept that pshat. What he does about the Einah question, I don't know. That's Arachin. Although Ayin Shom and the Arachayim, he has terutzim that could address it. But I want to go sort of me'inyan le'inyan. Yeah.
The real reason Yaakov wanted the Bechor was not for the Alpishnaim and not for the Avaida,
yeah,
of the Beis Hamikdash. He wanted it because he wanted the first bracha of Yitzchak. That's why he wanted it.
Maybe, but it doesn't seem that this was really going to get him that, because after this was told, Yitzchak still was going to, Lamaitz was still going to give the bracha to Esav. But maybe in Akhenami, maybe this gave him...
Then he wouldn't have to fool himself. Yeah, that's right. If he was entitled to the bracha as a bracha, he wouldn't have to fool Yitzchak.
Okay.
So why couldn't he tell him?
Okay.
Esav sold me the bracha.
Yeah, so apparently, what you see from there is that's not what he bought. The Bechira did not entitle him to the bracha necessarily. Although Rashi does bring down that there was some such connection. I want to talk about another kasha. Again, we mentioned that Einah kasha is discussed in Lamdisha sources. So there's another kasha which the Kseis HaChayshin actually does talk about, but before him also he brings down that the Rivash talked about it, a more lamdish akasha, that Yaakov was, Esav was selling to Yaakov the Bechira. Let's assume for argument's sake, that what it had to do with was Yerusha. Let's say that's the most simple reading of the Pasuk. So he was selling him the Yerusha. The Gemara says in Masechet Bava Metzia that if if somebody says Mashi Irash Me Abba Machor Lach Loyamar Klum, if somebody says that what I inherit from my father is hereby sold to you,
well, I will inherit.
Right, right. His father's still alive, but one day he's gonna die, and what I'll inherit from my father, I'm selling to you now. We'll make him Isaac Kinyan Shabichal now. Loyamar Klum. It has no. It does not take effect. Why? Because that's called the Davar Shalei Bala Ilam. You can only sell something once you have it. But before you have it, you can't sell it. So the Yuvash asked the Kasha that over here, if he was selling the Bechair, if the Bechair is Yerusha, so it's a Davar Shalei Bala Ilam. So how is that Mechira going to be Chal? And the Yuvash writes, the Yuvash is responding to a letter. The Yuvash is a Sefer of Shalat HaTshuvas, Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Sheshes. He was the leading Pesach in Spain at the end of the 1300s.
It was
Yerushalayim. Right, he's Yerushalayim. At the end of the 1300s, if I'm not mistaken, he was Nifter around the year 1409. Now, in one of his tshuvas, it's Simon Shin Chav Ches, someone wrote him a letter in which he said that, you know, Dabar Chazal say that you can't be kind of Dabar Shalayim Bala Ilam, but I heard that there's a way to overcome that problem. If you want to make a sale on a Dabar Shalayim Bala Ilam, the way to make it Bichal is to add a Shavua. And I heard that this is a rush. Rush is a very chashuv paisek. And this is that Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the rush, wrote in the name of his father, the rush. Now, Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the rush, is perhaps even more famous than the rush. That's the Torah. The two of them, it's a father-son combination that are two of the biggest paisekim in history. The rush, who wrote the halachic commentary on the Halacha de Kamasechtas of Shas, and then his son, the Tur, who wrote a very different kind of a Sefer, but also Halacha, but not Al HaShas, but he made up a new system of organizing Halacha, Arachayim, Yerdei, Chashamish, but Evan Ezer, and divided each one into a few hundred Simanim, and with that he organized all of Halacha, and wrote a classic Sefer that's called the Tur, or the Arba Turim. He was the son of the Rush.
Why was it called the Tur?
That's what he a tour means a row, and I guess it has to do with the fact that there were Arba Turim on the Cheshen. So he called his sefer, which had four sections or four rows, he called it the Arba Turim. But the Arba usually gets dropped out of the title, and people call it the tour. But they call him the Baal HaTurim, and they call the sefer the tour. And somebody wrote a letter in the late 1300s to the Rivash, in which he said that I heard that Rabbi Yaakov, the Baal HaTurim, said in the name of his father, the Rosh, that if you're trying to sell a Davar Shalei Bala Ilam, you can make it work, just add a Shavua. And he brought a Raya from Parshas Toldos.
How does that work?
Meaning, if the seller says that I'm swearing that this should become yours, so then it's Chal.
Even
it's still like right, it's what would be the lumnus? The lumnus is that what this Shulchan Torah would assume is that the reason why Kinyan can't be Chal on Davar Shalei Bala Ilam is because Chazal assumed that there isn't sufficient Gemiras Das, that people are really, meaning Kinyan is Chal when people are really serious about it. And if it's something tangible that's in front of us now, then we assume that there's real seriousness. And if it's something that's more in the luftin, so we assume that it's people, you don't have the sufficient amount of Gemiras Das that's necessary to make a Kinyan Michal. But if you add a Shavua, then that shows beyond the shadow of a doubt how serious you are about it, so that overcomes the problem of Gemiras Das, and that's why it will be Chal. That's the lumnus behind this theory. And what was the Raya behind this theory? So he says that the rush brought a raya from this parashat Chumash that Yaakov said to Esav, you want the adashim, you have to sell me the b'chayra. Esav said, fine, I'll sell you the b'chayra. Then Yaakov said, swear it to me. What did he need that for? He already agreed to the sale. So the rush said, oh, because he was bothered, if you sell it to me, but it's Davar Shalei Bala Ilam, it's not going to be chal. Make a shvua and then it'll be chal. So from here you see that Kinyan on Davar Shalei Bala Ilam can be chal with a shvua. Now this is a tremendous chiddush. In the Gemara, Bava Metzia Daf Tzayin, and a number of other places also, in the Gemara it says, "Ein adam makan davar shalei bala ilam." he's right. The Rivash gets this letter in the mail where it says that the Rosh, who was a tremendous Pesach, said a chiddush based on Psukim and Bereishis, that if you had a Shavua, then it could be Chal. The Rivash said, I don't buy it. That's too great a chiddush to base on Psukim and Bereishis. That's what it says. The Torah said in the name of his father, the Rosh. And the Rivash responds, and somebody wrote this to the Rivash. And the Rivash responded, I don't buy it. And then he said, "V'lav shmod de Rabbi Yaakov, v'loy shmod de Rabbeinu Asher chasim alav." He said, "Not just I don't hold of the chiddush. I don't believe the story. I don't believe that there's any such rush or there's any. It's a rumor, right? You said that somebody told you that Rabbi Yaakov said in the name of his father the rush. I have the Torah. It doesn't say it in the Torah. I have the rush. It doesn't say it in the rush. There's no such rush. There's no such Torah. Somebody made it up." And sold you a bill of goods. There's no such chiddush. And then he goes on to say, and anyway, you know, you want to know what? Right, right. This chiddush is davar shlo b'lo yalam. Right. And you want to know how lamaisa the kinyan was chal? He says it's not shver. Davar shlo b'lo yalam. The requirement that it be b'lo yalam is a din that's in chiddush in the Torah. This was before Mount Torah, so that takes care of the problem. That's how he says. Yeah, that's how he addresses the kasha davar shlo b'lo yalam. But to say that because of a shvua. The Rosh, the Torah, he says, can't be, and there's no such thing. Now, there's a big story behind, there's a big backstory to this. Really, there is such a Rosh, and there is such a Torah, and the Rivash didn't have it. We're all familiar with a commentary on Chumash called the Balaturim. Right? I'm open, I have here, Mekoros Gedolos open. So, in every Mekoros Gedolos Chumash, there's something called the Balaturim, which, if you look through it at all, what it, almost invariably, what it is, things like gematrias and Rishikavis and Gzeirah Shavas that he's done me'atzma, you know, that he makes up words that, you know, to find a remez, right, find a remez that would pertain to this parasha from something that says a different parasha. Last week, rather, we spoke out about Aturim that he made up the smichas between Yishmael, Alpanecha, Lachav, Nafal, Va'ela, Tilis, Yitzchak, Rimazim. It's all like cute veritlach, yeshmaka veritlach to say over at the Shabbos table with the glazel schnapps. That's what the whole Sefer Baal Turim is designed for. Now, the truth is that this is not how he meant for us to think of him on Chumash. This Baal Turim was first printed in the year 1500. Which, by the way, that makes it an extremely early print. I mean, that's really the early days of Hebrew printing. The Baal Turim was printed. The printer that printed it peeled it off of a larger work. What the Torah actually wrote was a full-length commentary on Chumash, a serious commentary that goes through the whole parasha, addresses all the difficult questions in the parasha, brings down almost all of the Rambans, brings down the Rambans at length, although he leaves out, it's interesting, he leaves out the Kabbalistic Rambans, but all the other Rambans he brings down, he sometimes adds a little, some words to make it a little more readable, but he brings down the Rambans, he brings down sometimes things from his father and other Mepharshim and sometimes his own ideas, but it's all to work out the Pshat in the Pasuk, the Pshat in the Parsha. And he attached to a section to the beginning of each Parsha, which he called Parparois. Parparois means dessert. And right, and that's the Geshmaka Ramazim, and he put it at the beginning of each parasha. And he wrote this in the 1300s. The Rav Yaakov Baal Turim was Nifter in the year 1340. I don't know exactly when he wrote this Sefer, but obviously sometime while he was alive, he wrote this, and it was in a manuscript. And in the year 1500...
It exists.
Yes. In the year 1500, a printer looked at this manuscript, and a printer has to be a good businessman, and has to know what's going to sell. And this whole long thing is not going to sell. But this part, that's going to sell. And he peeled out the parparois, just, right, which was on each parasha. He took just that. He put it in his chumash called the Balaturim. And I don't know who this printer was, but he really was a good businessman. Because this became a tremendous classic. And it's been printed literally hundreds and hundreds of times, maybe thousands of times. Every time somebody's printed a chumash, almost, you know, many of the times people printed a chumashim, they included the Balaturim. And that's what's called the Balaturim. And the rest of the work was forgotten about. It was just a manuscript. And, it was written in the 1300s. And it was never printed until 1805, meaning close to 500 years after it was written, is the first time that it was ever printed. The Chidah refers to it. The Chidah says that he saw the Ksav Yad, which the Chidah was in the late 1700s, so it's pretty close to the time that it was printed. There was this Ksav Yad, I don't know where it was. It was in a library, or was in, you know, some rich man, you know, had it in his personal collection. There was a single manuscript of this Pirush. It says on the top, it says, Pirush l'Rabbi Yaakov ben Harosh, Zatzal, I think, is it Zat Zayin Sadi Vav Lamed, is actually what it says over there. And then Beis HaMach Dalet, that's what it says on the top in big letters. And then it has this Pirush, and it was printed for the first time in the 1800s.
That's the full.
What they now call the Tur HaAruch. If you go to the Svarim store, you could buy it now. It's been reprinted, you know, a few times. After that, now you can get it in a nice edition. It's called the Tur HaAruch.
It has the Parparois in it also.
No. It's printed without the Parparois. The Parparois, they figure you could buy a regular chumash for that. The Tur HaAruch has just the other part, Aruch with an Aleph, meaning the long version of the Tur. But this Sefer was very not well known. You know, it was out of print. It was never printed for all those years. Now the Rivash was really before the days of printing. So to him it wasn't really negeya that, you know, a printer separated the two parts. He was before that. He was in the late 1300s. But even so, this manuscript never became very widespread, and he wasn't aware of it. He was, even though he was just one generation after the Torah, but he was apparently never aware of the fact that the Torah wrote a Pirush on Chumash. So he says, there's no such Torah, there's no such Rush. But Lamaisa, I have at home a Torah HaAruch al HaTorah, and over there you can take a look. And he does have this pshat. He brings down B'Shem his father, that his father has to kasha, why the Shavuah? And he says, oh, you know what? There's a chiddush that but with the Shavuah, the kinyan b'chal. It's mamash a Torah B'Shem his father, the Rush. And the Rivash, and somebody saw it and wrote this to the Rivash. The Rivash said, no, there's no such thing. But Al Kapanim, that means that there's a
Machlezer?
What?
So the Rivash ended up being Chayzer and said there is such
thing? No, he never saw that manuscript.
Why doesn't the Rivash know that this is good? Because of the same reason. It's in the parasha.
Oh, because he says, I have a different tarot. He says that the... He says to the Kashif, how Yaakov Yimak and Dovashal Olam, he says, because before Matan Torah, the rules were different. That's what the Rivash says.
But why does Yaakov make him swear?
So why then the Shvua?
Yeah. He didn't trust him. And if he swears,
I don't remember if he addresses that, but there are other answers to that are found in other Mepharshim. I don't remember if the Rivash does. But there's a very fascinating continuation to this story. Again, the Rivash says there's no such rush. He didn't have there's no such Torah, there's no such rush. He didn't have this Pirush. We have this Pirush nowadays. So we could, you know, say that there is such a rush. Which means really that, you know, it sort of refutes the Rivash. If you take a look in the new edition of the Shas Teshuvas HaRivash, the Mechon Yerushalayim put out Shas Teshuvas HaRivash, and this footnote's there. And I don't know who's the Magia who's putting out the footnotes, but you know how the way it works is that somebody that, you know, invests himself in a project, you know, is always partial to that project. So the person who devoted some years of his life to putting out a new edition of the Rush, he's a Rivash fan. That's how it goes. You know, the person that puts out the Ritva is a Ritva fan. The person that puts out the Ramban is a Ramban fan. So he was bothered by this Rivash. It's kind of like the Rivash has egg on his face, you know, because the Rivash says there's no such Torah, there's no such Rush. Because okay, I mean, no offense, you know, there's nothing against him. He didn't know, never saw the manuscript. But we in the 20th century, we know there really is such a Rush. He says, listen to what he found. He said this, that Rabbi Yochanan Fishel Perlau, who was a gadol that lived about 100 years ago. He wrote, this is not in his Sefer, but he says this is an article that's published in a Sefer called Sari HaElef, by, it quotes Rabbi Yochanan Fishel Perlau as saying that the Pirush, which I guess at that time had been in print for 100 years, of the Tur, Al HaTorah, is not really the Tur. Says it's not a real Tur. Now, I told you, the Tur HaAruch. Well, both. No, the two go together is indisputable. The Ksav Yad has both of them. Right, he's saying about the Baal Turim also that it's not a real tour. Now, I told you that I saw the front of the Ksav Yad. I mean, I'm not a collector, but in the front of the Turim Aruch, they have a picture of the front of the Ksav Yad, and it says in big letters on the top, Pirish L'Rabbeinu Yaakov Ben Harosh Zatzol B'Siyata Deshmaya. And that's what it says on the top. Rav Shapurla says, there were two Rabbi Yaakov Ben Rab Ushers in the times of the Rishayim. And there's, now, I don't know if he's saying that he knows that the other one was a Ben Usher, but there's somebody called Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir. Now, this is not a well-known figure, Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir, but he's somebody from the Yeshiva of the Baalei HaTosfos that I think at one time went to Eretz Yisrael. He's before the tour, by about, I don't know, not much. They probably overlap. He's like probably a generation older than the tour. I think he was in the time of Bichilmi Paris. He was right. Baalei HaTosfos. He was probably, I would guess, you know, an older man when the Baal Turim was a young man. But they sort of certainly at the same general time in history. Rabbi Yochanan Shapurla says that he found a tshuva. In the Shalas HaTshuvas, Mari Brun, that's Rabbi Stroll of Brun, who was a Pesach in the 1400s, a German Pesach in the 1400s. He was dealing with the following Shaila. So it's a fascinating Shaila, totally not a topic that we're talking about, but somebody hired a Jewish girl to be a housekeeper, to work in his house, and and to do errands for him. And so he sometimes wants to send her out to do a job. And she protested that, you know, you can't send me into a guy's house. She feels very vulnerable. And she said, it's not right. You can't send me into a guy's house. And he said, what do you mean? You work for me. So they sent the shout out to Rabbi Stroll Brun. And he said that, Avada, she's right. You can't send her. She wanted to protest also, you can't send me in the street. Called Kfu Devas Malach Panim. He said, no, that's getting carried away a little bit. But you're allowed to send in the daytime in the street. That's mutter. But to send her into somebody's house, that's really, not fair, not safe. You can't do that. And then he says, and it could be an aver of Eloi Sasa also. It says in Parshas Mishpatim, the pasuk says about the Omo Avri, Eloi Seitze Ketseisu Avadim. Now, we all, if you learn Chumash with Rashi, based on Midrash Chazal, it means that the Yitzia from, meaning how she goes free, is not Shemi Ketseisu Avadim, means she doesn't have a Yitzia of Shein Ba'ayin. But Marie Brun says, I saw in the Pirush of Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir, that Leisetze Ketseisu Avodim means that if you have a Jewish girl working in your house, you can't just send her out on any errand like you would to a slave. You have to make sure that it's an appropriate place to send her. So you can't send him. Now, this Pirush in Leisetze Ketseisu Avodim is in the Torah Aruch. In this Pirush that I have at home that's now print, now marketed as the Torah Aruch, it has this pshat on Leisetze Ketseisu Avodim. But Rabbi Shlomo Mibrun in the 1400s quoted Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir. So Rabbi Yochanan Fishel Perlau was suggesting that it says at the top of the Ksav Yad, Pirish L'Rabbeinu Yaakov Ben Harosh, it means a different Rabbeinu Yaakov Ben Harosh. It means Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir, whose father's name was Rabbi Usher. I don't know if he knows that it was, or he's just saying, who knows, maybe it was, but I see the Marie Brun is saying this is Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir. So he says this is not really the tourist Pirish altogether. Now, that means that the Baal Turim and the Mekorsi Gedolos also is not really the Baal Turim. It's not from
Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir was lived earlier than the
Torah. A little bit earlier, right. I think he was like a generation earlier. So this is a very, very obscure Yeshayim Rim. This Chiddush Rabbi Yochanan Fishel Perlau. You could find this in the footnote in the Shalat Shuvas HaRivash. It's in Siman Shin Chav Ches. The Mechon Yushalayim Shalat Shuvas HaRivash. He did his homework and he was hunting. I mean, he was hunting for something that was going to redeem the Rivash over here. But he found something incredible. And again, I don't know that it's right. I can tell you that when I saw this, I saw this a number of years ago and I really was very shocked. I went to my Rebbe, Shalom Spitz, who's a very big maven on Rishayim. Very big maven on Rishayim. I told him about this theory. I probably said it was something like, he dug up somebody called Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir. And Rabbi Shalom said, I've had Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir. He knew who Rabbi Yaakov HaNazir was. But he said, it can't be. He told me that he has a bunch of shtiklach Torah with Lishitasa. He's between the Torah la Torah and the Torah in his Sefer. So he's convinced that it's the real Torah. Okay, he didn't give me any examples on this background. A few weeks later, he came over to me on a Shabbos, and he said, he remembers my question, and yeah, there's one on this week's parsha, and he told it to me. It was Shabbos. I didn't write it down after Shabbos. I have no recollection now what it was. So I don't know any of the rayas, but I know that Rav Shalom is a very, very big expert on these things, and he said he doesn't buy this theory. He thinks the Torah is a real Torah. But Al-Kabbalah, Rabbi Yochanan Vishal Perla said that it's not. So, you know, I guess it certainly creates a little bit of a suffix. So it's a fascinating question, but I'll call upon him, coming back to the parasha. So we have this, whoever it is, but I'll call it the Torah B'Shem the Rosh, that we take care of the Darush Lebel Oilam problem because of the Shvua, and the Rivash, who said that he doesn't agree, there's no such din that you can take care of the Darush Lebel Oilam problem with the Shvua. Just to end off, that it's interesting that the Mepharshim talk over here about Darush Lebel Oilam. If we go back to the Ramban, the whole, like, you know, Darush Lebel Olam is a Lamdish concept. But in Machshava, in Drush, that's really what this was all about. The ability to grasp a Darush Lebel Olam. Darush Lebel Olam, something which isn't in the here and now, it's just in the future. That was really the whole, right? The Ramban says that's mamish the divide between Yaakov and Esav. That Esav, somebody who's, you know, the Ksil, that's totally focused on the present, today, has no concept of Davish Lavi Olam, but what set Yaakov apart was the fact that he was able to be kain. I don't mean in a halachic sense, but at least in a mental sense, he was able to be kain. He was able to grasp the chashivas of Davish Lavi Olam. All right.
My problem is that really, how can we sell something which might not be there? Because there might